This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
His hours. You're listening to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, in Houston, Texas. Radio for peace.
On Monday morning, I sat in the meadow by the lower creek at my ranch, the third day in a string of absolutely stunningly glorious spring days in Texas. My intention had been to meditate in sheer solitude and privacy, but I found myself instead just sitting and looking around at the wildflowers in fluorescent green new leaves, listening to the birds chirp and scenting honeysuckle being delivered by the breeze from somewhere deeper in the forest. Suddenly, the cell phone, with me in case a client called, rang. It was my brother. One of the attorneys in his office had extra tickets, and would I like to go see Bruce Springsteen that night? If I did, I would have to drive back to Houston in the afternoon. Did I even want to go to the concert? Brother told me it would be at the Toyota Center, to which I had never been, but assumed it was a large impersonal arena, and our seats were probably way high up. I thought back to high school when I went to see the Rolling Stones at the Astrodome and walked out after a handful of songs, so awful was the sound and so minuscule the ants on the stage. He pressed for a decision. Would I get up from my paradise and drive to Houston to see Bruce Springsteen? I hadn't been to a big rock show in a long time. Although my experience is that the older I get, the more disappointed I am by such events. All of them, whether it's big rock and roll, big sports, big political events, and so forth. I had actually seen Springsteen in 1980, when I was 14 years old, 27 years ago. Young and already famous, he was a major cultural figure with an edgy angst, writing about the dreamers, schemers, workers, husbands, wives, the losers, the frayed, the brokenhearted, and the hopeful of the American white working class. He was the authentic thing, hailing from Asbury Park, New Jersey, and his energetic show was terrific, a mixture of dark odes and upbeat, boisterous rockers, played for hours until both performer and audience were thoroughly tired. And then, almost right after that concert, my musical tastes began to change as I discovered other genres, and I stopped buying Springsteen's albums. But other people didn't. In fact, with the album and song Born in the USA, Bruce Springsteen became an American icon, packing stadiums to hear his anthem. It seemed to me that many of his new fans missed the deeper concerns in his songs, and focused only on the righteous patriotic anger in the chorus of that one song. And so the years went, Springsteen releasing more music, some of it vital and urgent, and some of it missing the earlier intense high-water marks, while I discovered and listened to other things. And so it was odd to me that there, on that extraordinarily beautiful spring day, sitting in a meadow of flowers on a cell phone, I heard myself tell my brother, "Okay, pick me up at 7. We sat in the upper deck, smack in the middle, facing the stage. As the roadies prepared the stage, I noted with disappointment that they were the same size as Mick Jagger had been decades before in the Astrodome. Thankfully, two large projection screens now flanked the stage. When the lights went down, the music came up, and where we were sitting, the sound was extraordinary, traveling and wafting the length of the arena, funneled directly up to our seats. It was also extraordinarily loud. Modern arena concerts are strange. If your seats are distant from the stage, it's as if you came to listen to a loud soundtrack and watch a big screen television, while the actual famous celebrities whom you came to see fade into insignificance on the stage. I found myself mostly watching the projection screen all night, feeling a little embarrassed. I left the meadow to watch a big television and have my ears blown. Springsteen, even as he approaches 60, was as earnest and hardworking as ever. And as he went through the songs, I suddenly realized why I had come. I wanted to see whether this influential icon would make it clear to his audience where he stood politically, and to try and sense if he was being heard. Several songs in, he took his acoustic guitar for a solo turn and told the audience that he had written this new song in the excitement of knowing that the last 8 years of bad management, as he put it, were about to end. Maybe a third of the Houston audience cheered. The rest remained politely silent. I assume when he uses this line in New York City, he gets a much bigger cheer. Toward the end of the night, he introduced another song by disparaging torture, rendition, and wiretapping, and he ended the night with a homebrewed Irish jig about immigrants, past, present, and future, coming to what he terms this American land. For this number, the lights came up, and I could see the full expanse of my co-listeners. I scanned the crowd carefully. All, and I mean all, appeared to be white faces, many middle-aged. The one black face that I could detect in the enormous room belonged to Clarence Clemons, Springsteen's iconic Big Daddy sax man. And then I realized that back in 1980, at the time of that first Springsteen concert, I left Springsteen at the same time that his large fan base of white working-class rockers came to him. They made him rich beyond all imaginings, but it seemed to me that it came at a cost, as he spent the next decades trying to hold on to these fans, as any entertainer wants to do, while trying to explain to them what was happening to them economically and politically, as he sang about the Vietnam War, factory closings, marriages straining under financial pressure, and the elusive American dream. In the past week, Barack Obama has been pilloried for using admittedly poorly chosen words to focus well-meant attention on how working-class Americans have based their votes on issues other than economic issues, and how that has resulted in the election of callous, market-obsessed Republicans and economic catastrophe for people living in places like New Jersey, Ohio, Indiana, and Pennsylvania. Bruce Springsteen is loved here in Texas, but he is revered in those other places, a native son of the working-class mid-Atlantic and Midwestern states. And while the drama, or perhaps the stultifying grind, of the Pennsylvania primary goes on, I couldn't help but wonder who Bruce Springsteen will pull the lever for in November. He gave a hint of it when he alluded briefly to a new wind blowing while introducing a song. Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Woody Guthrie, they are among our great modern folk singers, fusing the musical vernacular with the concerns and travails of everyday people. No musician has focused as consistently and passionately on the subject of the American white working class as Bruce Springsteen. The people of that strata are his subject, his muse, and his audience. Sitting last row center at the Toyota Center, I heard the boss loud and clear, and I dearly hoped that the rest of his audience, there that night, or anywhere else in this country or in the world, was finally hearing him too. I'm Leo Gold. This is the New Capital Show. Back in a minute.
they blew up the chicken man in Philly last night. Now they blew up his house too. Down on the boardwalk they're getting ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble busting in from out of state, and the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble out on the promenade, and the gambling commission's hanging on by the skin of its teeth. Well, now everything dies, baby, that's a fact. Maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair. And meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Well, I got a job and tried to put my money away, but I got debts that no honest man can pay. So I drew what I had from the Central Trust, and I bought us two tickets on that Rose City bus. Baby, everything dies, maybe that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, put your hair up, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Nights getting cold, and maybe everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. I've been looking for a job, but it's hard to find. Down here it's just winners and losers, and don't get caught on the wrong side of that line. Well, I'm tired of coming out on this losing end. So honey, last night I met this guy, and I'm gonna do a little favor for him. Well, I guess everything dies, maybe that's a fact. Well, maybe everything that dies someday comes back.
Welcome back to the New Capital Show. I am Leo Gold, your host. 713-526-5738 is the number. We'll be taking your calls in a bit. The phones are already jamming up, so if you want to get on, that's the number, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Already a listener has called in to say that Bruce Springsteen endorsed Barack Obama yesterday, and it's on the Springsteen website. I've no idea, I haven't checked it yet, but that's what caller says. Thank you for that information. www.newcapitalshow.com. Newcapitalshow.com. You can make comments on the show, send me email, listen to old shows, join our mailing list. We'd love to have you on the mailing list. If you haven't signed up for it yet, it's very easy to do right there on the right-hand side of the website. This weekend here in Houston, Mothers for Clean Air is having a 5K run. I won't be there, but we'll have a booth there. New Capital Show will have a booth there. 6:45 a.m. registration. You think that's bad? I got to get there at 5:30 in the morning. I don't know what I'm complaining about. My kids wake me up at 5 a.m. every morning. 7:30 is the 1K kids run. 8 o'clock is the 5K adults run. 8:15, the post-race party, and 9 o'clock awards. I think this is a very worthy event. KPFT itself is a sponsor of the event. Come on out. It's at McGregor Park here in Houston. A couple of news items, and then we'll get to your calls today. Bush to call for greenhouse gas curbs. In fact, he did this. A lot of controversy. Wall Street Journal and, of course, all newspapers reporting that the president yesterday welcomed the Pope. Of course, he welcomed the Pope, but he also said in a significant shift on global warming, President Bush is proposing stopping growth in U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by 2025. Wow. Let's see. He'll have been out of office for good 17 years by that point, and he signals that he is open to lawmakers reining in pollution from power companies. The stance set to be unveiled, actually it was unveiled Wednesday, this article was written shortly before the speech, at the White House, indicates Mr. Bush's willingness to grapple with the growing legislative debate over global warming. It's really wonderful that our president's willing to grapple with the issue. It marked an acknowledgement by the Bush administration that the U.S. likely will adopt some sort of broad new legal system to curb greenhouse gas emissions in coming years. My friends, here we are coming to the close of the Bush administration. George W. Bush, running as a candidate for President of the United States back in 2000, expressed to people who listened to him, expressed in his speeches that global warming was a concern, expressed an understanding that emissions would need to be curbed. Nothing has been done in the entire length of his presidency. He's making a speech now at the end indicating that he's going to change paths. What's happened is that the political climate in the country has changed thanks to you, thanks to people like you. He's being forced to listen. Republicans lost the election in 2006. As things stand, they stand to lose more seats in Congress. It's unclear who's going to hold the presidency, but regardless whether it will be John McCain, Hillary Clinton, or Barack Obama, all three have expressed an interest in curbing U.S. emissions. And so what is happening now is that George W. Bush sees that the legislation is going to get written to protect the environment, to protect the only planet that we live on and have. The only planet where we that we know of where our lives and the lives of other animals, plants, can be sustained. It is the single most important issue of our time. Not radical Islam or immigration or any other thing. Will we stand up and preserve our home? Or will we continue to despoil it? Will we listen to the scientists, our very best trained, best educated? Think of the investment dollars that have gone into, talk about capital. Look at the capital that's gone into training all of the scientists who are giving us the news about our environment. And as we know, our political leaders have refused to listen to it in many cases. At least George W. Bush has. In this speech, he indicates that he's now willing to listen. We can all agree or disagree on whether what he proposes is going to work. I think, of course, it doesn't go far enough. Many who share our opinions and our beliefs think it doesn't go far enough, but it's clear this is a battle he's lost and will lose. Article goes on, like an increasing number of utilities and manufacturers, the president is aiming to join the discussion in hopes of shaping the debate and creating a system that won't be too costly to industry or consumers. Whatever system we come up with, it shouldn't be too costly. I agree. It shouldn't be too costly. And it shouldn't be under-costed. It should be rightly costed. Whatever the cost of emissions are, that's the cost. It doesn't need to be tampered with, tamped down, puffed up. what our costs are need to be established. It's been the principle of the show from the time that we started back in 2000 and what? Two. Oh my gosh. I've been here since 2002, Laura? Wow. The cost is the cost. The cost is the cost. You know, if the cost is X, let's not make it X minus 1 or X plus 1. It's whatever the cost is. We have vast amounts of talent in this country to determine what's the cost of carbon emissions. What's the cost of pollution? What's the cost of not having a public transportation system? I've mentioned many times I've sat in the library at Rice University, and you will see extraordinary public books that are coming out now that are a mixture of public policy, statistics, economics, being produced at universities across the world by some of our best minds. The investment that has gone into training these economists, these statisticians, scientists, biologists, has been a true capital investment. And what we've witnessed in this administration is a total neglect of that capital base. A total refusal to look at the returns that is coming from that intellectual capital. Speech yesterday, the president signals he understands he can't take that position anymore. He may get something passed, he may not. There may be a bill that comes out of Congress, there may not. My guess is there won't be. My guess is that Democrats are going to say, you know what? We'll endure another few months until January of next year. We're not going to sign or create bad law because we think we can run the table come January. One more article, then we go to the phones. Again, 713-526-5738. Wall Street Journal again. German tots learn to answer the call of nature. Richard Louv, a journalist from San Diego, author of Last Child in the Woods, a book about how lack of nature in the lives of our children is what is resulting in attention deficit disorders and so forth. And that the way to solve those problems is to expose children to nature. I've seen it firsthand. A number of children have visited our ranch whose parents complain that their attentions wander, involved in video games and so forth. They spend a couple days with us, and parents have described the children as utterly transformed, calmer, more attentive. Wall Street Journal reports, German tots learn to answer the call of nature. Each weekday, come rain or shine, a group of children ages 3 to 6 walk into a forest outside Frankfurt to sing songs, build fires, and roll in the mud. To relax, they kick back in a giant sofa made of tree stumps and twigs. The birthplace of kindergarten is returning to its roots. While schools and parents elsewhere push young children to read, write, and surf the internet earlier in order to prepare them for an increasingly cutthroat global economy, some little Germans are taking a less traveled path deep into the woods. Germany has about 700 Wald Kindergarten, or forest kindergartens, in which children spend their days outdoors year-round. Blackboards surrender to the black forest. Erasers give way to pine cones. Hall passes aren't required, but bug repellent is a good idea. And of course, the board kindergarten itself means children's garden. Children's garden. The schools are a throwback to Friedrich Froebel, the German educator who opened the world's first children's garden or kindergarten more than 150 years ago. Think about that, folks. What we now think of as a kindergarten, a classroom setting, began, in fact, as an outdoor educational setting in Germany 150 years ago. We hear the word kindergarten. It doesn't mean anything, right? It means classroom for young five-year-old. In fact, it means children's garden, invented more than 150 years ago in Germany. Mr. Froebel counseled that young children should play in nature, cordoned off from too many numbers and letters. Only a fraction of German children attend Wald Kindergarten, but their numbers have been rising since local parent groups began setting up these programs in the mid-1990s, following the lead of a Danish community. Similar schools exist in smaller numbers in Scandinavia, Switzerland, and Austria. The concept is sparking interest far afield, even in the U.S., whose first Wald Kindergarten opened in... Laura, where did it open? Take a guess. What city? What do you think?
New York?
No.
I'm going to guess again.
Where did the first Wald Kindergarten... It's opened last fall in a city in the United States. Come on.
Los Angeles.
No.
I don't know.
Portland, Oregon. Portland, Oregon. That fantastic bastion and outpost of environmental consciousness. 713-526-5738. Let's go to the phones right now. First up is going to be Teresa. Hey, Teresa.
Hi.
How you doing?
I cannot believe it, Leo.
You got in early today.
Well, I decided I had to.
Yeah, you've been getting in late lately.
Yes. I thought at the beginning, well, I wonder how he's going to handle this stretch of how I take his subject and take it to the subject that I want to.
What's up? What's on your mind?
Well, I want people to attend the Amy Goodman event tonight.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I want you to be there or someone for you taking people who want to be on your email list
okay.
at a table.
All right.
And... your show is about value for money,
uh-huh.
so I'm telling you, there's a marvelous musician. His name is David Massengill, and if you get there at 6:30, you can hear him sing. He sings a song called The American Dream, which you mentioned in your monologue.
Yeah.
And when Emma's Revolution performed before Amy Goodman a couple years ago, they said, you know, be sure not to treat us like we're just background music or Muzak, because... we have a hard time getting into the media because we sing the messages that, like, Amy Goodman is talking about.
Yep.
So I'm hoping people will think about their interest in listening to your show is they want value for their money. So they can hear a marvelous musician who, incidentally, will be performing in Stafford on Friday and in Spring on Sunday. They can hear them.
You know, Teresa, Bruce Springsteen, you know, think back. It was funny. He talked about, was there a concert hall in Houston called Liberty Hall? Was there a place called Liberty Hall? I think there was. Wasn't there? Do you know?
I don't know. But once he changed his music, or once he was maybe seen as no longer pop,
uh-huh.
did he have a hard time finding places to perform? Was he on the radio still?
I think his trajectory has generally only been up and up and up. Yes, there was Liberty Hall. Yeah, okay. Ernesto says there was a... Liberty Hall was a place, and Bruce Springsteen, mm-hmm. at this concert, talked about his performance at Liberty Hall in front of 100 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In his days, when he was not known and traveling around the country, in a van, and played Liberty Hall, I thought that was extraordinary that he could remember the name of a place that no longer exists in Houston that he probably played 3 decades ago.
Well, I know when your people, if the people that are listening call KPFT, put their money on the credit card, or somehow come to this venue, which is the Pavilion Royale, which is just east of I-45 at Tidwell and Airline. If they come... you'd be amazed. You can get nose to nose with this musician and talk to them about their music.
Teresa, thanks for the call. It's a pleasure. We'll see you this evening.
One more thing.
Yep.
I have to tell you this. He sings a song called Wake Up, which is a great children's song. And he also sings a song called To Climb a Tree about the joy of a child climbing a tree. And I thought of your daughter.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway. Yep.
I think of her all the time. It's... it's a joy. It's a joy. Thanks, Teresa.
Bye-bye.
Great to have you. Laura's telling me KPFT sponsored that show?
At Liberty Hall.
KPFT sponsored the Bruce Springsteen show at Liberty Hall. Let's guess it was probably sometime around 1975, I'm guessing. KPFT sponsored Bruce Springsteen's show in front of a few hundred people in Liberty Hall, this radio station that has been around for 4 decades. And here we are revisiting this legend today who visited our city again Monday in the Toyota Center, and this station sponsored Liberty Hall. Who knows? The way the universe works, if this station had not sponsored that show, who knows, right? We all play a role in what happens later. And there may not have been the Bruce Springsteen that there is now if KPFT hadn't sponsored it. So think about it. When you join the station, when you become a member, and we sponsor musicians of the likes that Teresa's talking about, they are the future Bruce Springsteens of the world. Let's keep going. Next up is Hank. Hank, welcome.
Hey, Leo. Hank Woji here.
Yep, it's great to have you. How are you?
Very, very good. Glad you made the show.
Yeah. It was tough. It was real hard to get up that day. I mean, the weather's it was amazing, wasn't it?
It was gorgeous. It was unbelievable.
It's just spring is intoxicating.
My sister was in from Florida. I'm from Jersey.
Uh-huh.
Well, my family's from Jersey, but my sister, I flew her in for the show. And there were about 20 of us. We were sitting behind the stage.
Yeah, and
he
got up on that riser a few times and ran back there. What did you think? What did you think of the show? What was your read on all of it? You know.
Well, I've seen him many times. I've seen him more in small clubs in Jersey than I have with the East Street Band.
Oh my gosh!
Because growing up there, I mean, get out to the Stone Pony if you know the bands Bruce likes. And you get to the club, he just might show up if he's not on tour. So the last time I saw him was about 2.5-3 years ago at the Stone Pony. A band called Joe Grushecki and the House Rockers were playing. And the opening act happened to be Susie Tyrell, his violinist. And so the stars had aligned, so we got to the Pony, and sure enough, he was hanging out in the back bar with he and Patty and Sean Penn.
Uh-huh.
And got up and played about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in Jersey, the bars close at 2 a.m., but he kept going. They locked the doors of the club, and he played till about 2:15.
Yeah.
So he's quite amazing. Even when he's not on tour, he likes to get out and play a lot. As far as the show goes, very, very interesting. We had some discussions afterwards about it. We said that basically the show was pretty uneven, and I think there was a reason for that. And you brought it up about his material. Have you heard the new album? Have you listened to it a lot?
You know, I haven't listened to it a lot. My brother played me a few tracks from it, and that's what I've heard. I haven't listened to it a lot. As I say, I don't tend to go to the new albums that get released, and I tend to go a lot to his older music and Nebraska and so forth. But
interesting. You know, that's what the take that I got was this. First of all, you go to a Springsteen show, you expect to sing. People sing all the time on the choruses.
Yeah.
And a couple times, if you notice, he went and held the mic out to the crowd and they did silence.
Yeah.
I don't think the people really bought the album and knew the songs. I've been listening to it like crazy. I just couldn't get enough of it. It's a gorgeous album. Very dark album lyrically, but musically it's very upbeat, which is great because he's kind of sugar-coated the message a little bit.
Well, let me ask you this. There is this. I tried to highlight in the monologue this dichotomy between the message that he brings and the audience that listens to him. And of course, he's got many audiences, but in many parts of the country, you may find audiences that have voted consistently. And I'm interpreting here. It may not be the case, but it seems to me audiences that have voted consistently, perhaps, for Republican candidates in the past couple of decades, despite the fact that Bruce Springsteen is delivering a message of progressivism. Is that right, or am I wrong about that?
I'll tell you, here's the insight that I got that was very telling. When he started talking about the mistakes of the last 8 years, did that little monologue,
yep.
I heard boos. Not a lot, but scattered boos and a lot of silence.
Yeah.
And then there was some cheering.
Yeah.
One friend of mine was up in the
back. He's in Texas. He's in Texas.
Right. She said somebody behind her yelled something about stop talking, shut up, and sing.
Yep.
And I started thinking about the Dixie chicks. But the whole thing is, you're right, if he uses that same line up in Jersey, and I'm going to see him at Giants Stadium in July, I can't wait, 60,000 people singing along.
Will you call us back after that and tell us what's the reception for the message there? I'm assuming it's a regional
different
culture. Here he's coming into the backyard of George W. Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush, the father, and calling them bad managers, or calling George W. Bush a bad manager. You know, the Bushes still have their attraction here in the city of Houston, and there are many Republicans in Texas.
Yeah, and his message, like I said, I don't think enough people listen to the album. The album is totally anti-war. It's all about the Iraq War.
Yep.
It's very anti-war. And the songs are very dark. The lyrics are very dark. They paint dark pictures. And I think people don't want to look at that, especially in the red states, in Texas. A lot of people down here are in denial. They don't want to believe what happened over the last 7 years. They don't want to look at it, and they don't want to believe it. I think they want this to be over as quick as possible and move on to something else so that they can make believe they weren't associated with it. And I think people are going to have to take responsibility for what they did. And that's a thing that we're not real big on here in the United States, is taking responsibility for our actions.
Yeah. Hank, it's great to have you.
Great. Leo, you got a great show.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Hank Woji, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Next up, let's take Karen, if I can find the button. There it is. Hey, Karen.
Hi, Leo. I like all your messages this morning.
Great, thanks.
I especially am focusing on the American dream part of it.
Let's put aside the traditional, stereotypical American dream. What do you think the American dream should be? What should it look like?
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, there you go. You're on the spot. Look.
I think people ought to be able to hope. And the whole message of the great middle class of America, of being able to start with little or nothing, work your way up, have a decent life, be able to raise kids without going into debt, be able to have quality time with family as well as a satisfying job that makes it unnecessary for people to, have to focus completely on work all the time. I think we should have smaller communities with better transportation so that we don't have to be in our cars for an hour or more, just commuting each way to work. I think, like you, we should be able to enjoy parks and green spaces and be able to relax with our families on weekends instead of, as you said, taking along our cell phones or pagers and worrying about not even being able to relax. I mean, God, the Europeans, what is it? The French have sort of like a month's holidays guaranteed to them every year. Now, I don't know whether that's continuing, but, you know.
Karen, did you catch the front line on PBS the other night? T.R. Reid produced a front line in which he visited five other industrialized modern countries.
Oh, the health care thing?
To look at their health care systems.
Yes, I did. That was unbelievable.
I thought that was remarkable. My friends, if you missed it, you can see it again at frontline.org. T.R. Reid, former Washington Post correspondent, does a fantastic service. He gets into the details of these systems. It's not just the system's better, not good. He gets into the details. He draws the distinctions out between how each of these countries has structured their universal health care systems, how one country differs from another in terms of the structure of the insurance companies. In some cases, there are many. In Germany's 250 insurance companies. In other countries, there's a single government insurance payer. In some countries, there are caps on what doctors can charge and others not. A whole wealth of experience and information, and almost universally, it seemed to me, that from this documentary, that these systems work. They work. They haven't bankrupted the country. In all cases, each country pays less as a percentage of their gross domestic product for medical care than the United States. United States spends 15% on health care. Great Britain, 11%. Japan, 8%. The Taiwanese created a universal health care system about a decade ago. I think it was 1994 or so.
Yeah, they went around looking at all the others.
They studied up.
The best.
They picked you're exactly right. They studied every single system that was a notable system, and they picked the best elements that would work for that country. That country has a top quality health care system. It spends, Taiwan, 6%.
Yeah.
Almost a third of what we spend of our gross domestic product, they spend 6%. We spend 15%, and they have a system that insures everybody and is a quality system. Frontline.org. Go watch it again. It's fantastic.
Right.
Karen, thanks for the call. Yeah, real quick.
One last question.
Please.
On this business of say health care or, you know, having a decent retirement. I know you spoke about maybe having a program about the investment bank credit crunches and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, our guest keeps traveling.
I had one specific question for you with your expertise.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't own the stock of an investment banking house like Bear Stearns or Lehman or Merrill, but you have an account with them.
Mm-hmm.
With very conservative bonds, say, or money market stuff, what is your exposure or your last course resort if, like Bear Stearns, they begin to go under for lack of funds and capital cushion?
Okay.
I mean, you're not protected like the FDIC. Are you protected at all?
Look, Karen, I'm going to drop off now. I'm going to drop you off, and I'll address that right now, okay?
Okay.
Okay, thanks. There are protections in place for brokerage accounts and there are similar protections to FDIC. There are also some brokerage houses have protections above certain limits, call it $100,000. There are consortiums of investment banks that get together and form reinsurance pools, which themselves receive ratings from the ratings companies, which are under pressure. My money is held at a brokerage. My money's at Fidelity, and I feel very safe. You need to distinguish between being a shareholder in a brokerage house or a bank and being a depositor. And I would say that. And there may be disagreement from this. We may get calls in a second saying your money's not safe. My belief is that your money as a depositor in a brokerage or investment house, your money is safe, and your money is also safe in banks. We have a Federal Reserve that will make good on deposits. And that was one of the problems during the Great Depression. Now, it doesn't mean the dollar is going to be worth a whole lot. But I think that your money is safe in the banking system. It doesn't mean we don't have problems. I hope that answers the question, and I can address that more at another time. Let's keep going here. Let's take John. Hey, John.
Yeah, you're off on your program in the context of progressiveness, liberalism, anti-war issues, and give an example of Bruce Springsteen. I would like to let your listeners know that it is of utmost importance to a true progressive-minded people that be aware of the people who are most of the time ultra-conservative and anti-progressive, given the progressive slogans and doing the otherwise when someone criticizes them like yourself about Judaism and other things and not even apologizing and give an explanation why they did, why they do not let them speak and criticizing them. Why don't you be the one progressive and liberal-minded and explain why you cut me off and did not explain when I said that I don't like Jews for their merchant capabilities, which creates or increase inflation in society, and you call me anti-Semitic, which is a criminal.
Okay. Thank you for the call, John. We're going to move right along here. Next will be Rick. Rick, welcome to the New Capital Show.
I love Dr. Shade. I got cracks me up. Anyway. So the
newsflash. I'm afraid, Rick, that I'm going to be plagued by this gentleman for the rest of my life. So I've just decided. You know, in Zen we have an idea in the practice of Zen Buddhism that those things that antagonize you, that are out to get you, or you think are out to get you, that are the problems that come to you in your life, that you should treat them as an opportunity to learn about yourself. What is it that you're thinking? What is it that you're feeling? And to use those as opportunities rather than as anything else. So for me, that's what Dr. Che represents, an opportunity to think deeply about my own thoughts, my own feelings, and so forth. Anyway, what's on your mind, Rick?
Well, you know, differences don't have to be antagonistic. I mean, I disagree with you on plenty of things, but I think we have decent dialogue. Anyway, so the newsflash of today is that Bruce Springsteen's style in arena rock sucks. I mean, I could have told you that. But anyway, point.
Well, go on.
Yeah. So what I'm wondering is, what's your take on Obama's statements about the guns and religion and anti-immigration and stuff? Do you think he's an elitist, or do you think he just didn't phrase his stuff carefully at all?
Okay, Rick, your connection's not good today, so can I drop you off and make my comments? Will that be okay? Because you're breaking up. It's going to be hard for me to talk, okay?
You didn't catch it?
Yeah, I did. I caught it, but you're breaking up. So let me make the comments while you're off, okay? Okay. I think that, I don't know what this means. He's an elitist. I don't think he's an elitist. He doesn't have an elitist upbringing that I can tell. I would agree. Many commentators are saying that. I think he simply, I think he misspoke. I think he used a poor choice of words, and he could have used other words. I think also one of the problems has been in this episode, and is that he could have immediately come out and offered more of what I would consider to be an apology. And when he came under attack from McCain and Hillary, I think he reacted somewhat defensively. And so my response would have been really what he did with the whole Jeremiah Wright episode, which is he took it, he didn't respond defensively, and in fact he used it as an opportunity to make a groundbreaking speech and express in much greater detail and to great a lot of people watched it. He expressed his ideas in a much more full-featured way. And I think he should have done exactly the same thing here. I don't know why he didn't. He should have just said, I'm going to make a major speech to talk about what I meant. And he should have talked about the way that many people in the country have voted on so-called social issues or value issues rather than on economic issues. He could have done that. He could have held such a speech in Western Pennsylvania, and he also could have said in the speech, I'm really sorry, I misspoke, and I said something offensive, I've read it, I agree, but it wasn't what I meant, and I think that's basically what it comes down to. He just used a poor choice of words, and of course, the comments were made in California, and there are people in other parts of the country who don't get California, resent California, and it looked bad to them. So, He's had a bad episode here, and some of it I think has been self-inflicted. So we'll see. That's my take. I don't think he's an elitist. I think that he has good insight into the fact that people have cast votes for reasons other than economic reasons. Now, I'm not saying it's invalid to cast votes for reasons other than economic reasons. And I'm not saying today that in my monologue about Bruce Springsteen or echoing what Obama has said, that one must cast votes based in any way on economic ideas. But I think that at some point they've got to play a role. At some point, the way that a candidate is going to pursue defense and promotion of a constituency's economic interests should play some role, and I think that Obama and others have simply pointed out that that it hasn't carried nearly the weight that it should have, and that those constituents now find themselves in difficult economic circumstances. Factories that have been shipped abroad, and other problems, lack of healthcare systems, and so on. Okay, let's take the next caller. It's going to be Meyer. Hey, Meyer, welcome.
Well, thank you, and I started off with one area to talk about, and since since I got on, there's so many new ones that I'd like to just mention. First of all, if you use the word disenfranchised and bitter, I think that's exactly the right thing that Obama should have used, because people in small towns, especially when their economy has gone either to the Walmarts or to the, you know, other parts of the world, they're disenfranchised. They've lost their livelihood. They've lost their community. They've lost a lot of things. And they can be angry, Bitter's a loaded word, and that was a bad choice.
Yeah.
But
I agree with you there. I think you could have picked a better one. You could have said unhappy or sad or distraught, or I mean, who knows? Any people don't want to be thought of as bitter, even if they're bitter. You know, it's because bitterness signals sort of a reluctance to live with optimism, and I think that was in contrast to Obama's usual stance that people should carry around hope. So when he's concluded that a population is embittered, it implies that they have lost hope. And so it's in total contrast to the message that he was promoting back in February and March, and he simply he misspoke. I think he deeply regrets the use of that word. So anyway.
And politicians have always, whether it's, you know, in this case he's vying with Hillary, who, you know, I could certainly, I'm supporting Obama, but I could certainly live with Hillary. But they'll seize on it. I mean, when Jimmy Carter used, unfortunately, the word malaise, he was beaten over the head, you know, 1,000 times with it by the Republicans. That didn't mean he wasn't right in what he was trying to say.
Yeah.
It didn't mean that Geraldine Ferraro, and Obama's done the same thing in that regard, wasn't right in what she was trying to say, although the freshman senators have run, like Kennedy, have run, run for president and won, you know, and not been black. But I'm just saying, she did say, you know, there's some validity to what she said. But right now, anybody's going to seize anything that they can think is a misstep or a misspoke, speak, and, you know, and try and hammer their opponent with it. Unfortunately, you know, when it's two Democrats, we just hope it doesn't get to the point where the Republicans then turn, whoever wins, use it against us. Real quickly, the person, the albatross that you seem to be have around your neck, if he really wants a forum and he really wants to try and see how hard it is, KPFT is like an oasis in the desert, of progressive thought and progressive ideas, and usually I've heard that in most talk shows, a lot of comments that allow very conservative people with conservative views a lot of leeway. Try and talk on a conservative talk show with a liberal progressive thoughts, and not only are you cut off, you're cut off in a way that is rude and inhumane. So I don't...
Meyer, thanks. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. I mean, look, let's just say this. And let's see if this will satisfy. To anyone that I owe an apology to, I am deeply, deeply sorry. I can't sit here and suggest that Barack Obama issue an apology, and then say, you know, I shouldn't issue apologies. I've been on the radio now for 5-6 years, so anyone who I have caused offense to, it's been unintentional. And I am deeply, deeply sorry. I hope you will forgive me, and I hope we can move on from that. Okay? And I mean it, and I truly mean that, and I will mean that. If I've said anything that's been uninformed, if I've said anything that was not patient, I'm really sorry. I hope you will forgive me, and let's move on. But let's not call the show anymore demanding apologies. You have it. Whoever you are, whatever I've done. Next up is Judy. Welcome, Judy. Welcome to the New Capital Show.
Oh, hi, Leo. I'm sorry. I just tuned in about 5 minutes ago, and I was wondering what all the Bruce Springsteen stuff was about. I didn't hear it because I was at that concert,
uh-huh.
And so I was just wondering what you said. On
New Capital Show.com. You can listen to it again later in the day.
I don't have a computer.
Oh, you don't have a computer. Okay.
Is there something wrong with what Bruce Springsteen?
No, I was at the concert. I recounted my experience. What was your experience, Judy, at the concert?
I thought the acoustics were so bad. I was so frustrated that I didn't hear all his comments.
I see.
And I love him. I wanted to stay all night.
Where were you sitting?
I was like in the middle of the... to the left of the stage, in the middle of the arena.
Yeah, I was back in center. So the center, it was fine. Well, and so you struggled with the acoustics of the concert.
Oh yeah, that's why I was so frustrated that I didn't hear all of his comments. I heard mistakes of the last 8 years, and that's all I heard.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I was really frustrated.
Okay, Judy. Thanks.
Thanks.
Just a few minutes left. Just a couple more calls. Let's take Jared. Hey, Jared. Welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hey, Leo. Great show.
Thank you.
What I wanted to say was I want a new deal in this country. I think that the infrastructure has deteriorated and gotten so out of date and dilapidated that we need to take, especially in this time of economic hardship, we need to take all the people that want to work, that want a good fair wage, that want a government insurance type of program, to all band together, get some people elected that are going to start a new deal where we can go and we can create renewable energy across the country. We can improve our bridges, our roads, everything else in the country that needs to be updated and improved, and also at the same time improve our economic the way that the country has come along in the past few months. I think that it would increase people's buying power. It would allow people to a lot of people in this country that need a good job to get a good job and to put food on their family's table and allow them to have the types of things they would want to have. Just your thoughts. I'll go ahead and hang up and listen.
Thanks, Jared. Jared, I couldn't agree with you more. You are absolutely right, and we are working on a new deal. It's not going to look like the old New Deal. It will be a new deal, and I think it's going to include many of the components that you were talking about. It's going to include large-scale investment in alternative energy, and that's going to, and when I talk about energy, it's going to be increased fuel efficiency, it's going to be public transportation systems, it's going to be electricity grids, it's going to be electricity sources that are clean energy, it's going to be the remediation and cleanup and repair of old energy sources that are currently polluting, and you're absolutely right, it's going to create enormous numbers of jobs. And the businesses themselves are going to have very, very high returns to shareholders. I think we are going to have a universal health care system. My hope is that it is implemented wisely and in a way that that takes account of what other countries' experiences have done. We can learn from other countries. We should learn from other countries. That was the message from T.R. Reid's Frontline documentary. We cannot afford to think that everything was invented in America and that we know how to do everything. We stand to learn a lot from what they've done on those systems. I think we're moving there. I'm very, very hopeful. I'm not bitter. I think that there are many, many people who are hopeful. I think that the three candidates running for office are hopeful. I think there's an awful lot of hope out there. So I think that Bruce Springsteen is hopeful. Here's his news. He says, "Dear friends and fans, like most of you, I've been following the campaign, and I've seen enough to know where I stand." He says that Senator Obama, in my view, is head and shoulders above the rest. He said, "After the terrible damage done over the past 8 years, a great American reclamation project needs to be undertaken." Bruce Springsteen agrees with you, Jared. I agree with you, and you are absolutely right. Well, folks, we're there. Laura, thanks. Laura Slavin, always great to have you. You do such a wonderful job engineering the show. www.newcapitalshow.com is our website address. Feel free to drop in, join our subscriber list, send me email. I hope I'll see you at the Mothers for Clean Air run. Whether you run or you stand, it doesn't matter. Come by the booth and say hello. And we will be back with you next week. Until then, take care.
It's a dangerous place to be when you're pissed off on the local boys and your back's against the sea.
KPFT 90.1 FM in Hayes, Scarborough bring you the second annual Stingray Music Festival, returning to Crystal Beach April 18th through the 20th. Performing on three stages over the course of the weekend are Terry Allen, Daryl Scott, Ray Wally Hubbard, Girth Morlicks, The Stone Coyotes, John Evans Band, Mondo Signs, and the Sideshow Tramps. Also, we're introducing great new artists such as Scott Nolan, Ian McFerrin, Will Kimbrough, and many others. The Stingray Festival also welcomes a great group of painters and sculptors, as well well as a golf tournament hosted by the Eagle Brothers. Everything kicks off at 3 o'clock, April 18th. That's Friday on Crystal Beach. Come join music fans such as yourself with a great range of singers and songwriters. Tickets available at frontgatetickets.com or stingraymusicfestival.com.
This is KPFT Houston.
Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, will be in Houston tonight. Amy will speak this evening on her new book, Standing Up to the Madness, Ordinary Heroes in Extraordinary Times, in a benefit for KPFT. See Amy in Houston at a great new venue, the Pavilion Royale Event Center, 5800 Airline Drive. Tickets to the event are $15 pre-sale, $20 at the door. You can only get advance tickets until 3:30 today. Otherwise, just go to the Pavilion Royale to purchase your tickets. For pre-sale tickets and information, call 713-526-4000. A few passes to the exclusive reception for Amy Goodman still remain. For your tax-deductible contribution of $250, you can get preferred seating to the event, a copy of Amy Goodman's new book, and a ticket to the exclusive reception with Amy. Again,
the free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.